You're in tune with World Cricket Weekly Talk, presented by Teachers Blended Scotch Whisky, the spirit of achievement, Nigel Reid, alongside Zubin Sukari. And we are joined from Dublin, I believe, by a celebrating Warren Dutram. Celebrating? Why? Well, because he's the CEO of Cricket Ireland, and they are going to the ICC World T20s in Sri Lanka later this year. Warren, interesting to talk to you. So I've actually, before we get any further, would like to know whether or not you were back at base camp watching this all on TV or through internet, or you actually got out to celebrate with the guys in the United Arab Emirates. What was your itinerary like while this qualifying competition was going on?
Well, I was back and forth to Dubai on a couple of occasions for ICC meetings. The first was the ICC Chief Executives Committee, which I'm fortunate to be one of the three associate representatives for the 95 non-test countries. And then I was back out for a meeting of the High Performance Chief Executives, which was just this last week. So I only managed to watch our game against Oman, which was probably our least enthralling of all of the 11 counters we had during the actual tournament itself. But no, I got back Thursday, and I spent the last three mornings during the last latter stages of the event, pressing refresh on my internet connection and following it on the ESS streaming. So managed to get it, and it's very frustrating and very, very nerve-wracking to watch, but it was great theatre, if nothing else.
Cricket Ireland has grand plans, and T20 cricket is just a part of it. We suggested there, and Cricket Ireland has made no secret of the fact that it intends to be a test-playing nation by 2020. You mentioned the numbers of players. You want to establish a first-class cricket atmosphere in Ireland, like across the water in England as well. A lot of grand plans, and I suppose, to an extent, those are only achievable if Ireland continues to be successful on the international stage. But I was thinking about this knowing I was going to talk to you today, and I wonder this, Warren, given Ireland's progression. You talked about beating Pakistan and, of course, that momentous win over England at the World Cup in 2011. Now, of course, this success going to the ICC World T20s. And I wonder whether the relative success on the international stage is being matched by what you need to do domestically at grassroots to establish that first-class culture in Ireland.
It's a very good question, Nigel. What are the interesting aspects of investing into your men's senior squad and having such a professional setup at the top of the game? Is the danger is of creating an even bigger gap between club and country than may already have existed. And that's always one of the big concerns, that can suddenly be created. So what we've been really working on as part of our new strategic plan is to make sure that we can plug that gap as much as possible. And we've always had some success in that initially by our club cricket, the three main provincial unions, Leinster, the Northern Cricket Union, and the North West Cricket Union. They effectively run our club cricket structures. They were all encouraged to move to 8-team Premier Leagues over the last 12 to 18 months, the theory being we have best be best. So we've managed to get best be best in an intra-provincial situation. We're now looking to develop best be best in an inter-provincial position, whereby effectively we start to have the best of each of those unions playing against each other in a domestic first-class structure. And what we'll be looking to do is for those three provincial unions to play against each other in the three formats of the game. Effectively, by reducing the amount of senior elite club cricket, that has created gaps in the club calendar. And therefore, we'd be looking to think that those gaps can be filled with the interprovincial cricket we'd be looking to play. And alongside that, we'll be developing an academy system, more matches, 18 matches against English County second 11s, effectively really putting in place the player development pathway that would be, I think, replicated against most of the models in the full member countries. And if you're looking at the mapping what Cricket Ireland is doing against satisfying the criteria to be a full member country, the only gap in that CV is a domestic multi-day structure. And that is precisely what we're looking to address over the next 3 to 4 years.
It's fascinating to listen to the way the grassroots is being developed, because, you know, the headlines are always grabbed by the players on the international stage, but there's obviously a ton of work going on behind the scenes. Zub, you're listening to this intently as well. What are your thoughts on what Warren is saying about the way the game is being developed from the ground up?
Yeah, I think one of the key things he touched on, or phrases he used, was the gap between club and country, and I think a lot of the associates have that issue. You know, you have your international team and the team that's going out there, and then you have this massive kind of gap where, you know, from club cricket, which is not as structured, it's obviously not as, it's not going to be as strong, and it's difficult to prepare those players to play for Ireland or for Canada against, you know, some first-class teams. But this is exactly how you do it. I think, you know, a three-team provincial type of tournament or a league where they can encompass the second 11 teams in England is the way to do it. You know, it's a bridging gap, and it's going to be obviously a good standard on good grounds with the best playing the best. So I think, you know, all the things that he's saying is are the right things that they need to be doing to progress their cricket. And I'm hoping that they do it in a short period of time, and they'll reap the rewards if they haven't already.
Music to the ears of all cricket lovers. Is it something from what you hear Warren say that could in any way be replicated in Canada? Because Ireland has a plan and a structure and a blueprint, but geographically it's a very small country compared to somewhere like Canada. Is there any lessons that Canada can learn from what you hear Warren saying?
Absolutely. The fact that we had that bridging gap, I mean, we obviously have a larger country, and it might not be able to be played over the course of the entire country, you know, but we have a very strong club system here. I think if we invest in our club system a little bit better in the short term, bringing overseas players to play in our domestic competition, making sure every game is on turf, until we can start getting a smaller type of, you know, 30, 40-man kind of squads to play against each other in a weekday or something like that to do it. But yeah, I mean, you definitely can draw parallels from what they're doing. Just the fact that they're looking after their grassroots, and I like that the fact that they're saying, oh, 50,000 cricketers, which is a good number to have. And, you know, you're obviously going to get the Paul Sterlings and some good talented cricketers coming out. The more you have, obviously, the more you're going to get. So,
well, that's an interesting point in itself. Warren, come back into the conversation here, because I suppose one of the problems historically that Ireland has suffered from in recent years, and perhaps Joyce is the most obvious example, is the talent drain. That, you know, the very best Irish cricketers were cherry-picked by your neighbours across the Irish Sea. You know, clearly now you want to get to a stage where that doesn't happen anymore.
Yes, exactly. It's the double-edged sword. You have England right next to you, which allows some of your best cricketers to be developed in a professional environment. But the risk is in being prepared professionally, you run the risk of, I suppose, not just an English county turning the head, but England nation turning the head. You mentioned Ed Joyce, perhaps just as, perhaps even more currently, Owen Morgan now is or at least was a regular fixture in the England team. Boyd Rankin was called up recently into the England nine squad. Yes, look, there's no doubt it's a significant risk for Irish cricketers. And the more success we have, for example, against matches like England last year in the World Cup, the more we run the risk of not flying beneath the radar as we used to, and suddenly, wow, these guys have got some decent cricketers. Let's see if we can get them into the English county system. And that is obviously one of the risks that we run. But, you know, my job is to try and make playing for Ireland as aspirational a career as possible. And how are we doing that? Well, I suppose qualifying for World Cups is one very good way of doing it. Suddenly, young Irish kids can see, you know, heroes of theirs. They suddenly, rather than having cricketing heroes that used to be England Test guys, Flintoffs and the Bothams of this world, they're new cricketing heroes, the likes of Paul Sterling and Trent Johnston and Kevin O'Brien. And suddenly they see playing for their country as something that is exciting and it's engaging and it's fulfilling in itself as a career. We're obviously providing plenty of international travel. We're providing year-round number of fixtures. We're providing contracts for players. And as I said, the opportunity to be participating in winning for their country. And that's something that that's a vision we have to be able to sell. And once it starts getting on television, you then start getting more into the fame side of things. And the likes of Irish cricketers, whereas they used to be able to walk down the street and be barely recognized, suddenly it's something which the likes of certainly Kevin O'Brien, who would probably be our most high-profile player. Just this morning, I was back literally an hour from greeting the players back from their trip on the front page, not just the sports section, but of the Sunday Times, which would be one of the more august broadsheets here in Ireland, was a big picture of Paul Sterling holding his bat aloft, celebrating. And that was, you know, that's something that Irish cricket would never have had in the past. So I think we're suddenly finding that young Irish cricketers actually are feeling a greater loyalty to their team. Perhaps the best example of this recently is that in the Bangladesh Premier League, four or five of our players were offered contracts and only one decided to take it because the other four or five decided their country commitment was more important than their club and financial commitments.
How very, very interesting. And let's just draw a very quick parallel here in terms of the Bangladesh Premier League. I think there was one Canadian, the Canadian captain who went there, didn't play too much, Zubin, but that's in stark contrast to what Warren is saying about the Irish contracts that were offered.
Yeah, it's a testament to the loyalty and the patriotism they have towards Irish cricket, which is great. These obviously they've given them the opportunity to make a living and do well there and increase the profile of the cricket in that country. So it's and you can see by one guy going and playing and the rest staying back and playing for their country, which is great.
And it's the oxygen of publicity. If you've got somebody holding their bat aloft on the front page of the Sunday papers, you can't buy that sort of publicity. That all contributes to it as well. Warren, our time is short. Before we go, I want to get a comment from you on the Wolf Report. And, you know, here we are in 2012. Ireland wants to be a test-playing nation by 2020. So even with my bad mathematics, that gives you about 7 or 8 years to achieve your goal. Does Cricket Ireland welcome the Wolf Report, or is it a wait and see and decide what the ICC are going to do with it?
Do we welcome it? Absolutely. I mean, we welcome it wholeheartedly. Why? Because it effectively says, well, the sport is in a bad place, or what it needs to be is more robustly governed, ethically sound, and meritocratically structured in terms of its competitions and in terms of its membership structures and its funding. I mean, it would almost sort of provide all of the wishes come true. And what is particularly encouraging is that it arose out or it emanated from a pretty broad consultation process that would have included all of the full members as well. So surely among all the full members, there must be those who feel slightly embarrassed about the state of the game and the perception of the game and its credibility internationally in terms of its governance. Of course, we're also not naive, and we did read with a degree of eagerness the top of page 29 that says, well, once you separate the principle of full membership from having to play test cricket, we think you should immediately upgrade to associate into full membership. Now, it didn't specifically state Ireland, but I guess Ireland would be relatively well placed if that were to happen. He did say that should happen by July 2013. I wouldn't be naive. I suspect that we're going to struggle to have that. I think there'll probably be one of those that'll be, I imagine, discussed in some form of a working party, which I wouldn't be surprised to see emanating from the next board meeting. But we also understand that it's going to be the full members, some of the full members can only lose by the Wolf Report. And if one is talking about losing the sense of entitlement they've had forever in terms of funding, competition access, status, I think if any of that is threatened to be compromised, I think that's going to take a little bit longer. So we're not naive. We understand things will take time, and we're prepared to be patient, provided that debate isn't used as an excuse for procrastination.
Patience is always a virtue, but do you sense resistance in some parts of the world? I mean, the Indian board have come out and dismissed the whole thing.
There will be resistance, there's no doubt whatsoever, and we understand that's going to be the case. We hope that the more considered response from the board is going to be, well, yes, I understand the BCCI has rejected the report outright. I trust they weren't rejecting ethical standards and good governance. I suspect they were probably just rejecting some of the more controversial aspects, such as changes in funding and competition structures and membership structures. But of course, that just demonstrates it's going to be all the more difficult for us to achieve those things. But one hopes that there are going to be voices of moderation in the full members and in the boards, and that even if things don't happen next year, that a pathway is put in place, because if no pathway is put in place, then really the sport isn't a level playing field.
Warren, a delight to talk to you. A hearty congratulations to Cricket Ireland and the team. We will look forward to their exploits in Sri Lanka at the World T20 later in the year. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks, Nigel.
That is Warren Dutram, the CEO of Cricket Ireland. You're in tune with World Cricket Weekly Talk, presented by Teachers Blended Scotch Whisky, the spirit of achievement.